This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, the new space race. With NASA focused elsewhere, private companies are competing to get a rover on the moon. At stake are tens of millions of dollars in prize money and the promise of future contracts. And Maine chef Kathy Guntz joins us with seasonal recipes for spring. And we welcome as well tomorrow's opening game at Fenway with a history of the beloved ballpark's first year. But first, does today's frantic, always-on lifestyle have you feeling a little anxious? Well, pop a pill. Prescriptions for benzodiazepines like Xanax, Ativan, Clonopin, and Valium have risen 17% since 2006 to nearly 94 million each year. An increasing number of Americans have no qualms about taking a cheap and effective benzo before a high-stakes meeting or when facing a loaded to-do list. Lisa Miller is columnist for The Washington Post and contributing editor at New York Magazine, where she wrote that we are living in the age of Xanax. Her article provoked dozens of comments from readers, making us curious to hear more. Lisa, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks. I'm very happy to be here.
So Xanax is the biggest seller among these benzodiazepines, or benzos for short. So what's the appeal?
Xanax is the most popular psychopharmaceutical drug in the country, if you include its generic form. So that's more than Ambien, that's more than Zoloft, that's more than Prozac, that's more than any of the name brand psychotropic drugs that you've heard of. And the appeal is that it chills you out instantly. It's like having a glass of wine. It's got a reputation among users as alcohol in a pill, and that's because you take it and 15 minutes later, you feel less anxious than you did before.
It's a not-so-distant relative of the Valium or Mother's Little Helper so popular in the 60s, but you note that people aren't popping them secretly. In fact, they're passing them around.
Well, it's funny because we have a very ambivalent relationship with these pills. A lot of people are using them. As you mentioned at the top of the show, you know, 96 million prescriptions a year. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of users. And privately, among friends, people joke about them. They say, you know, oh, God, I had such a terrible day. I need a Xanax. But in my story, for example, nobody would go on the record saying that they use them because we still feel that using pills to modulate our mood is weak somehow, that we should be strong, that we should be tough, that we shouldn't need to use pills. And so we have this kind of bifurcated idea about them. We like them, we use them, we joke about them, we trade them, we give them to our friends, and at the same time, we don't admit publicly or to our bosses or to our children that we use them.
Yet, it's such a popular drug, and you write that today, panic strivers have replaced sullen slackers as the caricatures of the moment. Xanax has eclipsed Prozac as the emblem of the national mood. What is it that makes this the age of Xanax?
Right. I mean, this was what struck us at the beginning of the conceptualizing of this story, was we were thinking about, you know, 1994, the year that Prozac Nation came out, the Elizabeth Wurtzel book, and just the images that were in culture were so different, right? Kate Moss looking so vacant, Kurt Cobain so strung out. You know, there was this kind of aimless, slacker attitude especially among young people, and it was translated into fashion and in movies and in music. This idea that striving, achieving, ambition was bad. That was for somebody else. And now, you know, everybody's anxious. Everybody's anxious about getting a job. Everybody's anxious about getting their kids into college. Everybody's anxious about getting into college themselves. You know, there's this kind of hyped up anxiety about money, education, politics, the state of the world, your privacy, the internet, the fact that other people can see your stuff online. You know, there's everywhere you turn, there's this kind of threat that's both unknown and colossal. And I think that's making a lot of people very stressed out.
And you profile plenty of benzo users, many who think their anxiety is kind of a key to making them tick. And you have also taken Ativan before. So what was happening in your life that made you reach for an Ativan?
Well, right. I mean, I start the story with an anecdote from my own life, which is that my mother was dying 6 months ago. And you know, I was in a panic. It's not unusual. I was very upset, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I just, my heart was racing. It was, I couldn't sleep. And then I remembered that she had some Ativan by her bedside, and I went and I got some. And it worked. In that moment, that relief was so welcome. I can't even, you know, I couldn't have done it any other way. And a lot of people who use these benzos obviously aren't in such stressed out circumstances. But as I said, you know, the relief it offers is extremely fast, and it's extremely cheap, and it's extremely effective.
We're talking about the rising and flagrant even use of Xanax and other benzos with Lisa Miller, contributing editor to New York Magazine, where she wrote about how America learned to stop worrying about worrying and pop its pills instead. Well, yes, the extreme moment of anxiety and pain of your mother dying. But there is this a distinction that you make between extreme anxiety disorders like PTSD, panic attacks, phobias, and this situational anxiety, the kind of free-floating anxiety that people experience in high-achieving, busy lives. So are more Americans suffering from anxiety disorders or just more likely to cope using pills?
It's impossible to tell, right? Because, you know, 60 years ago, you want to say that more people are suffering from anxiety now, but 60 years ago, people were facing the threat of nuclear annihilation every single day, and they were ducking and covering in school, and their children were ducking and covering, and there was this sense that the world could blow up at any moment, and that was not false. And so I think it's hard to definitively say that we are more anxious now than we were. What's different, I think, is the pills we take to address our anxiety, and also the nature of the threats. 60 years ago, we knew what the threats were. Our politicians were telling them what they were, telling us what they were. We were comfortable with authority telling us what to do to address threats. And now the feeling that we have is that threats are everywhere and nowhere at once. You know, as I said earlier, you know, the internet is creating a lot of anxiety for a lot of people and a lot of work, as well as a lot of convenience. You know, the European debt crisis is causing a lot of anxiety for a lot of people who have 401ks. Unemployment, even though it's going down slightly, it's still affecting a lot of people. And these things, even if they're not affecting you directly, make you nervous.
Mm. The other threat, of course, is that addiction with benzos.
Yeah, we need to talk about that because...
Well, you write that rehab visits tripled between 1998 and 2008. Autopsies of Whitney Houston, Heath Ledger, Michael Jackson all revealed some form of benzo. Very glam there, but the typical abuser is the white man between 18 and 34, unemployed. Now, is there kind of some kind of play here, Lisa? There's a glamorous New York cast on using drugs that doesn't really work elsewhere.
I don't think that that's true so much. I think a lot of people use them in New York and elsewhere. I think maybe in New York we joke about them over dinner more. But with 96 million prescriptions a year, the use is widespread and more than in New York and L.A. I think the problem with benzos is that they're extremely addictive, especially Xanax. And if you have problems with other substances, whether you're, you know, a busy, glamorous TV producer or whether you're an unemployed white man between the ages of 18 and 34, you probably shouldn't be taking them because they're very addictive and people who have addiction problems tend to get on them and then not be able to get off. And all of the negative responses I had to this story were stories like this. You know?
A lot of those. And a lot of people saying they judged it better to attack the source of anxiety rather than, you know, the sweaty, nervous symptoms. You can't just put these things that make you anxious away until they pop up again and you take another pill.
I agree with that, and I think that's what we should all be doing in the ideal world, but we don't live in an ideal world, and that's sort of what our story is about. You know, in an ideal world, we can all take mindfulness classes and learn to deep breathe and manage our stress, but in the real world, you know, we have two little kids, and we're running around, and our spouses work, and we're trying to pay the bills and, you know, get stuff done, and, you know, shelling out a lot of money for a mindfulness class that's far from your home when you got to get dinner on the table is not necessarily realistic. You know, putting your cell phone away when you have to go to the beach, when you're going to the beach, is not realistic if you're expecting your boss to call. So we really do have to manage these stresses. These stresses are real and they're in our lives. And, you know, I'm not advocating the use of benzodiazepines, but I am remarking that they're there and they do help in situations like
that.
Well,
Lisa, thank you so much. An interesting article and an interesting conversation.
Thanks.
Lisa Miller, contributing editor at New York Magazine and columnist for The Washington Post and author of Heaven, Our Enduring Fascination with the Afterlife. You'll find a link to her website for more and also to the article called Listening to Xanax, including plenty of interesting comments from people who have struggled with benzo addiction and others who think, why not? Life is short. Sometimes we need to feel better. You can weigh in yourself there or at wordofmouthradio.org or on our Facebook page or Twitter. Coming up, private companies in an amped-up space race. We're going to get a profile of some of those competing to land a rover on the moon and all the prize money and investment capital up for grabs. That's when Word of Mouth continues.